You're listening to The Entrepreneurs with me, Daniel Bache. Today, my guest is Martin Barry, founder and CEO of Manifesto, a market and hospitality brand based in Prague, which launched back in 2018. Martin is a landscape architect originally from New York City and is also the founder of ReSight, a nonprofit organization focused on design and architecture in the urban landscape. The city is something that is constantly evolving and growing, and Manifesto is a great showcase for how we live our lives. It's also a great launch point for small businesses or an additional location for established brands, all housed in an ultra-modern market experience, built in unused corners of the city as either a permanent solution or temporary burst of life. The tech-enabled markets allow people to enjoy a cashless market experience while also creating the perfect atmosphere for people to interact and engage with local businesses. And while the pandemic and its restrictions have created difficulties in people getting together, as you'll hear, Manifesto has allowed businesses to try out new offerings which will inform and in many cases become part of those brands going forward. Just think of how far options for delivery and takeout have come in the past year. Manifesto's award-winning Prague locations have caught the attention of a number of other cities, and Martin and his team are now working to expand the brand to Germany, Belgium, and further in Prague. Here's Martin now with the story of Manifesto.
Yeah, we describe Manifesto as a hospitality concept. What we do is we build food marketplaces, which have a combination of online and offline sales. So we have online delivery and ghost kitchens, and we have a front of house food market, which is more or less right now we have two markets in Prague, and those markets have food and beverage tenants, all independent food and beverage owners, entrepreneurs. We help them with their businesses by either growing them or advising them on menus and things like that so that they can reach a large amount of customers, which we bring into the markets. We're a design-focused organization, we're a sustainability-focused organization, and an innovation-focused organization. So these are cashless markets. They run on 100% renewable energy. And they're cultural centers, more or less. They're primarily outdoors. And so we have these kind of outdoor event venues within the markets where we host music, film, workshops, cooking classes, tastings, things like that. So it's kind of, in a summary, it's a food market with a strong cultural component, and it's a completely cashless environment. So we're kind of have a big technology backbone with that cashless component.
Now, you touched on what I guess would be three pillars for the company there and sort of your main drives. But talk to me a little bit about how you got started. You said you're centered in Prague, but I know, Martin, you're not from the Czech Republic, of course. So talk to me a little bit about how this became an idea and sort of the problem you were perhaps looking to solve when you thought up this brand.
Yeah, sure, Daniel. My background is, it's not really an easy story. It starts in New York. I was born in Manhattan. Like any sort of middle-class family in the 1980s, we moved out and lived in the suburbs for the majority of my childhood. So I lived in Westchester County outside of New York City. I eventually moved back into New York City and spent like 10 years there before I came to Prague. And that experience, like being from New York City, but spending a lot of time in, let's say, more rural area outside of New York, it kind of fused this mentality in me, or this kind of worldview and aesthetic view, where I was always kind of merging the natural area and urbanity. So my practice as I studied history and business, and also I got a degree in landscape architecture, spent like upwards of 9 years in New York designing projects around the world, mostly public space kind of projects, which were doing just that, kind of creating public places, which brought nature into the city. So these projects were all around the world in 15 different countries. And so I always saw myself like being based in New York City, but kind of a global citizen. You know, I was traveling a lot for work in my 20s and early 30s. And I somehow landed up in the last recession, 2008. Of course, architecture at that time was reeling, real estate was reeling. And we were kind of at the forefront of that crisis, 2008 to 2011, as a kind of boutique architecture firm in New York. And so in 2011, I accepted a Fulbright Fellowship. I eventually decided to leave New York for a few months. And I thought that was a kind of perfect time after working through the recession to come to Europe and relax, right? To enjoy my time, have a few beers in Central Europe, and then go back and practice architecture again. While I was here in Prague at that time, I was teaching, and I also started a conference and a festival, which then became a global event on architecture, cities, and real estate called Resite. That was more successful than I could have ever dreamed of. And so even if I went back to New York in 2012, 2013, I was kind of still managing that organization from New York. And we did annual events in Prague, which attracted thousands of people on the topic of architecture, real estate, urbanism, all around the topic of how do you make a better city? How do you make things more lovable and using space as a place to bring people together? Well, that eventually led me to leave my career in architecture in 2015. I landed in Prague and back in Prague to run this organization and kind of expand the event internationally, which we did. We ran events in Berlin and in Lisbon. We did some of those with Monaco, in fact. And I realized, like, after a year or so, full time of doing this, after leaving my career in architecture, that I was a placemaker, that it was great to talk about making places through conferences and through media, which is what Resite was doing. But I needed to make stuff. I wanted to make places like I did as an architect, where people could come and gather and have cultural activities. And design was a big part of that, right? As an architect, I sort of was tired of working for clients. That's a whole nother story. But you know, as an architect, you might have, you know, if you have 100 projects as an architect, probably like 95 of them are just to kind of pay the bills in the office. And 5 of them you're really passionate about and you love. And then those are the kind of things that like really make your career, those 5 projects. And so I decided like I didn't want to work as a consultant anymore. I wanted to build my own places. And so I wanted to be on the other side of the table. I wanted to be the client, not necessarily the architect anymore, the landscape architect anymore. And so we looked in at what we were doing with Resite. It was kind of cultural organization, organizing these big events. And I also looked at my network in real estate in Central Europe, and I sort of saw that Prague was missing a place that was like a good gathering place for people and food. It was sort of missing, I think, some really good architecture. And so I thought, like, let's create a place that, you know, I'm not a developer, but like, what can I afford to build where we can kind of bring people together on a daily basis, not just on an event basis, but really every day. And that's where Manifesto came from. It came from a place of how do we look at the city and recreate a place in the city and make it a real gathering place that's kind of focused on sustainability and design and some of the things we really care about. And so Manifesto came out of that. And the conception was that we would find a brownfield that was kind of underutilized place in the city that no one really cared about. And we'd remake that place. And so I leveraged my network and got access to a brownfield, honestly, right in the center of the city, which was kind of hiding under everyone's nose, owned by a friend of mine. And we, in a few short months, we built Manifesto, the first one. On the first day, we had something like 10,000 people show up. So the project was announced like less than 2 months before we opened, and it was remarkably resonant with the community. And so that kind of drove a whole different outlook to my career and to the work I was doing. Whereas I really love making places, but I really want to be in control of that so that we can do all of these kind of things that we're doing now, which is like integrating technology and sustainability and higher design and food as a medium to do that.
You know, the people that have been to Prague, of course, will know it's a city that's no stranger to the market, of course. And you talked about being right in the center of the city. I can't help but think, though, not only in the strange time we are in now, where we have come to realize the importance of bringing people together, and not only for commerce and retail, but for our own well-being, of course. I can't help but think, you know, this sort of concept is also great as a driver for some of those things you're talking about. I'd love to just dig more into that idea as being, you know, a cashless market, being a seller of sustainable interest, working on renewable energy. Where did that sort of concept come into what is essentially a reinvigoration of a classic market?
Well, I think, like, coming at this from the perspective that we did, which was like, I have to be totally honest, like a lot of people that start businesses, I didn't know the first thing about markets, Daniel. I visited maybe dozens. Probably I'm more of a connoisseur than most, because I tend to like to go into night markets and things whenever I travel. And so I've been in markets in Malaysia and Singapore, Taiwan, mainland China, of course, the US and Europe. And so that was about the extent of my knowledge of the marketplace itself and the gastro business. Of course, I was like a bartender in college, bar back in college, but we didn't really have any knowledge of the business itself of food and beverage. And so that was like a huge risk going into this. And if I knew what I know now, I would never would have done this, of course. But that was kind of the beauty, I think, of the way we developed the company, in that we were able to look at it from a fresh perspective and do things, I think, in the marketplace that maybe people who are working in markets for a long time, they never would have done because it was maybe too big of a risk or whatever. But we were doing things like the cashless environment, for example. Like in Europe, we're one of the first fully cashless places where we just don't accept cash. And almost everyone, except for MasterCard, told me that it wasn't possible to do that. First of all, it was against the law. Second of all, customers wouldn't come. They would be mad. And we have like 97% of our customers that love cashless. We don't really have any major complaints about being cashless market. And of course, that's great now because we think this is one of the things that can kind of prevent the spread of COVID. But it's also just great for the business because it's great for our tenants. They can trust their employees. You know, one of the things that I think people don't like in the bar business and the food business is that there's a lot of cash transactions, some money can be hidden. And so this kind of provides tons of transparency, a ton of safety for the people working on the site. We've never had any kind of petty theft or robberies on our site. And so being outsiders allowed us to kind of change the way in which we're doing business in the market by being cashless. It also allows us to help our tenants. So we have way more data points in the traditional marketplace. We know exactly what's being sold in the market, so we can help our tenants grow. We can help them refine the menus. We can help them refine the prices, things like that, optimize their labor and supply chain costs. So there's a lot we can do with the data that we have on the transactions to help our businesses grow. In that sense, we're not really a market operator. We're kind of an accelerator for small independent businesses. And we're a technology provider because we provide the point of sale technology and the analysis on all the data. So we're kind of helping them in a way which a traditional market operator doesn't really do. We, of course, lease space, but then we offer a whole bunch of services on top of that. I think that's a big change also. And like, you know, also allows us to focus on things like sustainability. It's something that's kind of core to us. And so we're using 100% renewable energy through one of our partners. And that's something most food and beverage tenants, they're not really so interested in. In fact, we get a lot of pushback on it because it costs a little bit more. But for us, it's really important to do. So we're able to kind of focus on these kinds of initiatives, I think, being outsiders.
You talk about sort of the services that you do provide for a business that would be coming to you. It sounds to me like in many cases, some of the tenants and businesses that are there wouldn't otherwise be able to sort of have this type of offering because you're sort of giving them a whole package, which makes sense and makes it a little bit easier too.
I was a couple minutes late for this call because we just had a potential new tenant coming in, and I don't typically sit for these meetings, but it's like someone in my network. So I wanted to see what they had to say. And they want to start a new business. It's a young couple. They want to start like a bowl business, like a side bowls and smoothies and things, but more of a health food offering, which I think we need actually more of in our markets. And so they have a great idea. They have a pretty good marketing plan, but they don't really know too much about the food and beverage business. So that's where we have a bunch of food and beverage people on our team that can kind of dig into our data, use their own operational knowledge. And we'll help them create their business plan. So they're coming to their landlord, us, and we're going to actually help them create their business plan so we can make sure they're profitable. And so that's definitely an offer that they're not going to get when they just sign a lease with a mall operator or, you know, a traditional real estate owner. That's, I think, a big thing that we're offering. We also, as part of the services, we offer marketing. So that's part of the rent contracts that we're doing the marketing for the market, which has allowed us to bring like over 2 million people in the last 2 years in the city of Prague, which is like 1.3 million people. So we've kind of reached a pretty big audience in a short period of time, which a traditional restaurant would really never be able to do. So kind of three things we're doing. We're bringing down the cost of entry for an independent restaurant and gastro operator. We're bringing down the operating costs because they have kind of less staff, less overhead, less space to take care of. And we are bringing them more customers through our marketing platform while offering them the kind of advisory on the business modeling and operations. So it's really full service, I think.
Economically, does that allow you to become partners with some of these businesses? Are there those that you're investing in as well in terms of helping them grow?
You know, we haven't done that yet. We did think about creating a fund, like an accelerator fund for promising businesses, that we would participate in the fund that would maybe invest in some of these businesses. But I'd say that's like next step. We're considering it. We kind of like looked at it, tax implications and everything. At the moment, like, I have to be honest, like, we have our hands full. We have two markets. We have 35 tenants. We own 5 of the bars within those markets. So in 2 years, it went from a team, which was Radka and myself and a couple other people, to now over 70 people in less than 2 years. You know, it's a small rocket ship that we're on. And so we're kind of balancing, like most entrepreneurs that grow relatively quickly, balancing our desire to do a lot with our need to kind of focus and make sure we're doing what we do well now. That's a huge challenge, just like creative people like us and, you know, entrepreneurs that they want to do everything. But I think one of our core goals in this year, at least, is to kind of focus and edit what we're doing and do it much better. And I'd say like in the next 2 years, we will roll out a fund, which will be primarily for accelerating businesses and also for lending, because we also realize that, like, in our experience now, small businesses are really great at what they do in food and beverage, but they're not always sort of the best cash flow planners and business modelers and stuff like that. So that's like next step, is how can we help them with their cash flow and get them access to financing, which they wouldn't normally have through the banks. The banks are too conservative for most of these businesses.
I just wonder, lastly, Martin, if you could talk to us a little bit about the actual design. You said earlier you're a guy that studied landscape design. You think about these design first. That's hugely important for you. So if you do expand to another city, maybe you get a blank slate. Maybe you don't always get the exact space you want, but you have to work with the space you sort of get. So talk to us about how you actually go about laying this out and what sort of designs go into the markets you do have.
Yeah, sure. So I'm still in charge of the design and the architecture verticals and manifesto. The difference is I'm not doing the detailed design anymore, which is great because I'm able to focus on lots of other things, but I'm still kind of leading the creative process and, of course, the programming process for what's needed. So, for example, we're designing a new market right now. This one is also in Prague. It has about 30 units and 19 front of house food and beverage units, and then the rest are back of house, ghost kitchen, or other types of units. It starts with, like, we come up with a massing, much like any architectural study. You kind of study the site. This one is a parking lot and former Vietnamese kind of market where they sold kind of luggage and these kinds of things. And so we're taking over the site. We're completely redeveloping it. And we start with this massing plan internally. We start with some kind of mood boards, like, what do we want this place to feel like based on the environment that it's in? We're working with external consultants for the architecture. So we're working with one of our trusted architects that we like, that worked on our last market. They're creating the concept designs, and we meet with them basically on a weekly basis to kind of, we have a collaborative design process because we have architects that work with me internally, and then we work with our external consultants to kind of finalize the design process. A similar case is in Hamburg. We are working on a 2,500 square meter market in the center of Hafen City in Hamburg that will open in a couple of years. We're starting that process now. So it's very similar. We've created a massing and kind of mood boards internally. We think about the sustainability requirements and the materiality, things like that. We are custom designing the point of sales. From a design perspective, we always, like, my background, Daniel, has, like, been about creating places for people. So we were interested in kind of human-centric design, customer-focused experiences. So how do you create an experience which is really comfortable for people? It's not distracting, but it's exciting. So it's kind of a bold minimalism that allows people to feel really comfortable in the space. It allows them to know that they're kind of in a clean environment. It's one of the things I don't like about other food markets is that they're kind of chaotic. They're either, like, filled with lots of branding or traditional kind of food markets, night markets. They feel a little bit, like, unhygienic. So we wanted to kind of create, let's say, the modern marketplace, which feels super clean from a design perspective and also hygienic perspective. And it kind of feels bold. It feels exciting. So, like, we've a pool in our last market. In the center of the market is a small pool that, you know, it's kind of a bold central element of the space. We're doing another one in our next market in Prague. So the pool will be 3-4 times larger than the last one. And it sits in the very center of the market. So it's a place where we've done a dance performances and these pools. People sit around them. They eat their poke bowls or burgers kind of with their feet in the pool. This is really important for us to kind of create an exciting experience that feels a little bit different than where you've been before, but also quite comfortable. Our current markets are reusable. They're modular. So picking up a market right now, like in the next 6 weeks, and we will move it over a matter of like 10 days, and we will expand it by 2 times. So the market has sat in that one location for a little over a year. So it'll be 18 months. And now we're moving it to a new location where it will be for 5 years and we'll expand it. So this kind of reusable modular units is also kind of quite conceptual and sustainable. We're reusing almost everything that was originally built in the first location. So that's also kind of quite important for us, that they're modular, prefabricated, but also feel kind of unique and special.
Very well said. Martin, thank you so much for your time. This has been fascinating, and we look forward to checking in with you again soon to see how those modular expansion plans are going. This has been great. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm really happy to talk about it with you, Daniel. Thanks.
That's Martin Barry, CEO and founder of Manifesto, speaking to me from Prague. You can check them out at manifesto.city. And finally, on today's program, running is a sport and pastime many of us will have treasured in the past year as a way to escape the news cycle and to find some freedom during lockdown. It's part of the reason why Japanese brand Asics, one of the oldest and biggest running shoe companies in the world, wants to advance the study of running on our mental health. They've launched a new platform called Sound Mind, Sound Body, and have announced a new study in partnership with Dr. Brendan Stubbs, who is a leading mental health researcher at King's College London. To learn more, I spoke to Gary Raucher, who is Executive Vice President for Asics Europe, the Middle East, and Africa.
Asics is going back to its roots, actually. So we were founded at a time of adversity, quite similar to what the world is facing today. Just after World War II, the world was in crisis and spirits were really low. And our founder, Mr. Onitsuka, saw the power of sport to uplift people's spirits and moods. And once again, the world is in a situation where we're in crisis and there's been a profound impact on people's mental well-being. So we're going back to our roots and more explicitly communicating that ASICS stands for a sound mind and a sound body. It's actually in our name. ASICS is an acronym for the Latin anima sana and corpore sano, which means a sound mind and a sound body. And what we're doing is making a commitment to our founding purpose.
That's really interesting, and I'm glad you brought that up, because this is, in a sense, perhaps coming full circle for you in launching a platform called Sound Mind, Sound Body. Can you talk to us a little bit about what this is and what the plan is for research in the mental health area?
Sure. Well, I think it's important now more than ever that brands not only say, but do. So it's important that we act. It's one thing that we're going to change our global tagline to Sound Mind, Sound Body and use that consistently in all of our communications. But in addition to communications, Sound Mind, Sound Body will actually guide everything that we do. So we're making commitments. We're making commitments to research. We're making commitments to innovation. And we're making commitments to raise funds and awareness for mental health charities. You asked specifically about the research. We've just completed the feasibility portion of what will be a landmark study to show the impact that sport and movement has on people's mental well-being.
Yeah, we all know about the importance of, I think, getting out for a walk or a run these days when a lot of us are stuck at home. But I imagine this has a much wider application, and you're hoping it gets used right around the world for everything from maybe running to walking. But talk to us a little bit about how that will actually look in scope. How do you plan to study people?
So what we're doing is we're employing cutting-edge biometric technology to chart the differences in an individual's cognitive and emotional reactions both before and after exercise. And we're looking at six different primary metrics. We're looking at interest levels, excitement levels, frustration, relaxation, cognitive stress, and focus. And what we do is we actually put headsets on people before they do their activity, and then we again measure those levels immediately after the activity.
And what's the plan for use of this data in the long term? Obviously, it's going to take a little while to gather all of that. What are you planning, and how do you plan to publish that?
Well, there are a few different ways. There will be a communications platform where we want to, again, raise awareness, but also raise funds to help charitable organizations that are supporting people that are dealing with mental health issues. But in addition to that, we're going to use this insight to help guide our future roadmap of both products and services. We have an Institute of Sports Science in Kobe, Japan, and we actually will use all of this data and give it to our scientists to help them develop the next generation of ASICS products. We are a product-led company. We always will be a product-led company. We make the most technologically advanced, fit-for-purpose gear, both footwear and apparel, for when people are participating in a performance sport. We want to supplement those products with great services. And that's why we have, in the past, made the acquisition of the Runkeeper app, most recently of Race Roster as an organization. We're building a whole digital ecosystem that will go hand-in-hand with our products.
Just lastly, I would love to ask you a little bit about ASICS as a global brand. You mentioned Runkeeper and some of the data that you will be able to collect, a platform that people use to log their workouts. I'm curious if you're hoping to learn anything about regional differences or about different running communities. You're in Amsterdam, I'm in London, two massive running cities. But is there anything you're hoping to learn there?
Absolutely. So because of the scope of this study, we're looking to compare differences in different regions, in different cities. And then as part of our commitment to actually take action, what we would like to do is actually go into parts of the world and even potential specific cities where there is even more of a need to uplift people's spirits and their mental well-being and propose holistic solutions to try to improve the well-being of that particular community. So because of the breadth of data that we will have, we'll be able to do those analyses and publish reports to see what is the current level of people's mental well-being and how much of an impact can sport actually play in different parts of the world.
That's Gary Roucher, Executive Vice President of ASICS for Europe, the Middle East, and Africa, speaking to me from Amsterdam. For more information or to take part, visit ASICS.com. That's it for this week's show. My thanks to Martin Barry and to Gary Roucher and to Christy Evans, who mixed and edited this show. I'm Daniel Bache. Thank you so much for listening, and goodbye.